The rage brought every aspect of my being into sharper focus. I could even feel the elasticity of my shield more exactly now. Feel that it was not a band so much as a layer, a thin film that covered me from head to toe. With the anger rippling through my body, I had a better sense of it, a tighter hold on it. I stretched it around myself, out from myself, swaddling Renesmee completely inside it, just in case Kate got past my guard. Kate took another calculated step forward, and a vicious snarl ripped up my throat and through my clenched teeth. "Be careful, Kate," Edward cautioned. Kate took another step, and then made a mistake even someone as inexpert as I could recognize. Just a short leap away from me, she looked away, turning her attention from me to Edward. Renesmee was secure on my back. I coiled to spring. "Can you hear anything from Nessie?" Kate asked him, her voice calm and easy. Edward darted into the space between us, blocking my line to Kate. "No, nothing at all," he answered. "Now give Bella some space to calm down, Kate. You shouldn't goad her like that. I know she doesn't seem her age, but she's only a few months old." "We don't have time to do this gently, Edward. We're going to have to push her. We only have a few weeks, and she's got the potential to..." "Back off for a minute, Kate." Kate frowned, but took Edward's warning more seriously than she'd taken mine. Renesmee's hand was on my neck. She was remembering Kate's attack, showing me that no harm was meant, that Daddy was in on it. This did not pacify me. The spectrum of light I saw still seemed tainted with crimson. But I was in better control of myself, and I could see the wisdom of Kate's words. The anger helped me. I would learn faster under pressure. That didn't mean I liked it. "Kate," I growled. I rested my hand on the small of Edward's back. I could still feel my shield like a strong, flexible sheet around Renesmee and me. I pushed it farther, forcing it around Edward. There was no sign of a flaw in the stretchy fabric, no threat of a tear. I panted with the effort, and my words came out sounding breathless rather than furious. "Again," I said to Kate. "Edward only." She rolled her eyes but flitted forward and pressed her palm to Edward's shoulder. "Nothing," Edward said. I heard the smile in his voice. "And now?" Kate asked. "Still nothing." "And now?" This time there was the sound of strain in her voice. "Nothing at all." Kate grunted and stepped away. "Can you see this?" Zafrina asked in her deep, wild voice, staring intently at the three of us. Her English was strangely accented, her words pulling up in unexpected places. "I don't see anything I shouldn't," Edward said.
"And you, Renesmee?" Zafrina asked.
Renesmee smiled at Zafrina and shook her head. My fury had almost entirely ebbed, and I clenched my teeth together, panting faster as I pushed out against the elastic shield. It felt like it was getting heavier the longer I held it. It pulled back, dragging inward.
"No one panic," Zafrina warned the little group watching me. "I want to see how far she can extend."
There was a shocked gasp from everyone there. Eliezer, Carmen, Tanya, Garrett, Benjamin, Tia, Siobhan, Maggie. Everyone but Senna, who seemed prepared for whatever Zafrina was doing. The others' eyes were blank, their expressions anxious.
"Raise your hand when you get your sight back," Zafrina instructed. "Now, Bella, see how many you can shield."
My breath came out in a huff. Kate was the closest person to me besides Edward and Renesmee, but even she was about 10 feet away. I locked my jaw and shoved, trying to heave the resisting, resilient safeguard farther from myself. Inch by inch, I drove it toward Kate, fighting the reaction that fought back with every fraction that I gained. I only watched Kate's anxious expression while I worked, and I groaned quietly with relief when her eyes blinked and focused. She raised her hand.
"Fascinating," Edward murmured under his breath. "It's like one-way glass. I can read everything they're thinking, but they can't reach me behind it. And I can hear Renesmee, though I couldn't when I was on the outside. I'll bet Kate could shock me now, because she's underneath the umbrella." still can't hear you. How does that work? I wonder if... He continued to mumble to himself, but I couldn't listen to the words. I ground my teeth together, struggling to force the shield out to Garrett, who was closest to Kate. His hand came up. Very good, Zafrina complimented me. Now. But she'd spoken too soon. With a sharp gasp, I felt my shield recoil like a rubber band stretched too far, snapping back into its original shape. Renesmee, experiencing for the first time the blindness Zafrina had conjured for the others, trembled against my back. Wearily, I fought back against the elastic pull, forcing the shield to include her again. Can I have a minute? I panted. Since I'd become a vampire, I hadn't felt the need to rest even once before this moment. It was unnerving to feel so drained and yet so strong at the same time. Of course, Zafrina said, and the spectators relaxed as she let them see again. Kate, Garrett called as the others murmured and drifted slightly away, disturbed by the moment of blindness. Vampires were not used to feeling vulnerable. The tall, sandy-haired Garrett was the only non-gifted immortal who seemed drawn to my practice sessions. I wondered what the lure was for the adventurer. I wouldn't, Garrett, Edward cautioned. Garrett continued toward Kate despite the warning. His lips pursed in speculation. They say you can put a vampire flat on his back? Yes, she agreed. Then with a sly smile, she wiggled her fingers playfully at him. Curious? Garrett shrugged. That's something I've never seen. Seems like it might be a bit of an exaggeration. Maybe, Kate said, her face suddenly serious. Maybe it only works on the weak or the young. I'm not sure. You look strong, though. Perhaps you could withstand my gift. She stretched her hand out to him, palm up, a clear invitation. Her lips twitched, and I was pretty sure her grave expression was an attempt to hustle him. Garrett grinned at the challenge. Very confidently, he touched her palm with his index finger. And then, with a loud gasp, his knees buckled and he keeled over backward. His head hit a piece of granite with a sharp cracking noise. It was shocking to watch. My instincts recoiled against seeing an immortal incapacitated that way. It was profoundly wrong. I told you so, Edward muttered. Garrett's eyelids trembled for a few seconds, and then his eyes opened wide. He stared up at the smirking Kate, and a wondering smile lit his face. Wow, he said. Did you enjoy that? She asked skeptically. I'm not crazy, he laughed, shaking his head as he got slowly to his knees. But that was sure something. That's what I hear. Edward rolled his eyes. And then there was a low commotion from the front yard. I heard Carlyle speaking over a babble of surprised voices. Did Alice send you? He asked someone, his voice unsure, slightly upset. Another unexpected guest? Edward darted into the house, and most of the others imitated him. I followed more slowly, Renesmee still perched on my back. I would give Carlyle a moment. Let him warm up the new guest, prepare him or her or them for the idea of what was coming. I pulled Renesmee into my arms as I walked cautiously around the house to enter through the kitchen door, listening to what I couldn't see. No one sent us, a deep, whispery voice answered Carlyle's question. I was immediately reminded of the ancient voices of Aro and Caius, and I froze just inside the kitchen. I knew the front room was crowded. Almost everyone had gone in to see the newest visitors, but there was barely any noise. Shallow breathing, that was all. Carlyle's voice was wary as he responded. Then what brings you here now?
Word travels,
a different voice answered, just as feathery as the first. We heard hints that Volturi were moving against you. There were whispers that you would not stand alone. Obviously, the whispers were true. This is an impressive gathering. We are not challenging the Volturi, Carlyle answered in a strained tone. There has been a misunderstanding, that is all. A very serious misunderstanding, to be sure, but one we're hoping to clear up. What you see are witnesses. We just need the Volturi to listen. We don't care what they say you did, the first voice interrupted. And we don't care if you broke the law.
No matter how egregiously, the second inserted.
We've been waiting a millennium and a half for the Italian scum to be challenged, said the first. If there is any chance they will fall, we will be here to see it. Or even to help defeat them, the second added. They spoke in a smooth tandem, their voices so similar that less sensitive ears would assume there was only one speaker. If we think you have a chance of success.
Bella, Edward called to me in a hard voice. Bring Renesmee here, please. Maybe we should test our Romanian visitor's claims. It helped to know that probably half of the vampires in the other room would come to Renesmee's defense if these Romanians were upset by her. I didn't like the sound of their voices, or the dark menace in their words. As I walked into the room, I could see that I was not alone in that assessment. Most of the motionless vampires glared with hostile eyes, and a few, Carmen, Tanya, Zafrina, and Senna, repositioned themselves subtly into defensive poses between the newcomers and Renesmee. The vampires at the door were both slight and short, one dark-haired and the other with hair so ashy blonde that it looked pale gray. They had the same powdery look to their skin as the Volturi, though I thought it was not so pronounced. I couldn't be sure about that, as I had never seen the Volturi except with human eyes. I could not make a perfect comparison. Their sharp, narrow eyes were dark burgundy, with no milky film. They wore very simple black clothes that could pass as modern, but hinted at older designs. The dark one grinned when I came into view.
Well, well, Carlyle. You have been naughty, haven't you?
She's not what you think, Stefan.
And we don't care either way, the blonde responded. As we said before.
Then you're welcome to observe, Vladimir. But it is definitely not our plan to challenge the Volturi, as we said before.
Then we'll just cross our fingers, Stefan began. And hope we get lucky, finished Vladimir.
In the end, we had pulled together 17 witnesses. The Irish, Siobhan, Liam, and Maggie. The Egyptians, Amon, Kebi, Benjamin, and Tia. The Amazons, Zafrina and Senna, the Romanians, Vladimir and Stefan, and the Nomads, Charlotte and Peter, Garrett, Alistair, Mary and Randall, to supplement our family of 11. Tanya, Kate, Eleazar and Carmen insisted on being counted as part of our family. Aside from the Volturi, it was probably the largest friendly gathering of mature vampires in immortal history. We all were beginning to be a little bit hopeful. Even I couldn't help it. Renesmee had won over so many in such a brief time. The Volturi only had to listen for just the tiniest second. The last two surviving Romanians, focused only on their bitter resentment of the ones who had overthrown their empire 1,500 years earlier, took everything in stride. They would not touch Renesmee, but they showed no aversion to her. They seemed mysteriously delighted by our alliance with the werewolves. They watched me practice my shield with Zafrina and Kate, watched Edward answer unspoken questions, watched Benjamin pull geysers of water from the river or sharp gusts of wind from the still air with just his mind, and their eyes glowed with their fierce hope that the Volturi had finally met their match. We did not hope for the same things, but we all hoped.
Chapter 33, Forgery.
Charlie, we've still got that strictly need-to-know company situation going. I know it's been more than a week since you saw Renesmee, but a visit is just not a good idea right now. How about I bring Renesmee over to see you? Charlie was quiet for so long that I wondered if he heard the strain beneath my facade. But then he muttered,
need-to-know, ugh.
And I realized it was just his wariness of the supernatural that made him slow to respond.
Okay, kid. Charlie said.
Can you bring her over this morning? Sue's bringing me lunch. She's just as horrified by my cooking as you were when you first showed up. Charlie laughed and then sighed for the old days. This morning will be perfect. The sooner the better. I'd already put this off too long.
Is Jake coming with you guys? Though Charlie didn't know anything about werewolf imprinting, no one could be oblivious to the attachment between Jacob and Renesmee. Probably. There was no way Jacob would voluntarily miss an afternoon with Renesmee, sans bloodsuckers. Maybe I should invite Billy, too, Charlie mused. But, maybe another time. I was only half paying attention to Charlie, enough to notice the strange reluctance in his voice when he spoke of Billy, but not enough to worry what that was about. Charlie and Billy were grown-ups. If there was something going on between them, they could figure it out for themselves. I had too many more important things to obsess over. See you in a few, I told him and hung up. This trip was about more than protecting my father from the 27 oddly matched vampires who all had sworn not to kill anyone in a 300-mile radius. But still, obviously no human being should get anywhere near this group. This was the excuse I'd given Edward. I was taking Renesmee to Charlie so that he wouldn't decide to come here. It was a good reason for leaving the house, but not my real reason at all. Why can't we take your Ferrari? Jacob complained when he met me in the garage. I was already in Edward's Volvo with Renesmee. Edward had gotten around to revealing my after car. As he'd suspected, I had not been capable of showing the appropriate enthusiasm. Sure, it was pretty and fast, but I like to run. Too conspicuous, I answered. We could go on foot, but that would freak Charlie out. Jacob grumbled but got into the front seat. Renesmee climbed from my lap to his. How are you? I asked him as I pulled out of the garage. How do you think? Jacob asked bitingly. I'm sick of all these reeking bloodsuckers. He saw my expression and spoke before I could answer. Yeah, I know. They're the good guys. They're here to help. They're going to save us all, etc., etc. Say what you want. I still think Dracula 1 and Dracula 2 are creeptacular. I had to smile. The Romanians weren't my favorite guests either. I don't disagree with you there. Renesmee shook her head but said nothing. Unlike the rest of us, she found the Romanians strangely fascinating. She'd made the effort to speak to them aloud since they would not let her touch them. Her question was about their unusual skin, and though I was afraid they might be offended, I was kind of glad she'd asked. I was curious, too. They hadn't seemed upset by her interest. Maybe a little rueful. We sat still for a very long time, child, Vladimir had answered, with Stefan nodding along, but not continuing Vladimir's sentences as he often did. Contemplating our own divinity. It was a sign of our power that everything came to us. Prey, diplomats, those seeking our favor. We sat on our thrones and thought ourselves gods. We didn't notice for a long time that we were changing, almost petrifying. I suppose the Volturi did us one favor when they burned our castles. Stefan and I, at least, did not continue to petrify. Now the Volturi's eyes are filmed with dusty scum, but ours are bright. I imagine that will give us an advantage when we gouge theirs from their sockets. I tried to keep Renesmee away from them after that. How long do we get to hang out with Charlie? Jacob asked, interrupting my thoughts. He was visibly relaxing as we pulled away from the house and all its new inmates. It made me happy that I didn't really count as a vampire to him. I was still just Bella. For quite a while, actually. The tone of my voice caught his attention. Is something going on here besides visiting your dad? Jake, you know how you're pretty good at controlling your thoughts around Edward? He raised one thick black brow. Yeah? I just nodded, cutting my eyes to Renesmee. She was looking out the window, and I couldn't tell how interested she was in our conversation, but I decided not to risk going any further. Jacob waited for me to add something else, and then his lower lip pushed out while he thought about what little I'd said. As we drove in silence, I squinted through the annoying contacts into the cold rain. It wasn't quite cold enough for snow. My eyes were not as ghoulish as they had been in the beginning, definitely closer to a dull reddish orange than to bright crimson. Soon they'd be amber enough for me to quit the contacts. I hoped the change wouldn't upset Charlie too much. Jacob was still chewing over our truncated conversation when we got to Charlie's. We didn't talk as we walked at a quick human pace through the falling rain. My dad was waiting for us. He had the door open before I could knock.
Hey, guys. Seems like it's been years. Look at you, Nessie. Come to Grandpa. I swear you've grown half a foot.
And you look skinny, Ness.
He glared at me.
Aren't they feeding you up there?
It's just the growth spurt, I muttered.
Hey, Sue, I called over his shoulder. The smell of chicken, tomato, garlic, and cheese issued from the kitchen. It probably smelled good to everyone else. I could also smell fresh pine and packing dust.
Renesmee flashed her dimples. She never spoke in front of Charlie.
Well, come on in out of the cold, kids. Where's my son-in-law?
Entertaining friends, Jacob said, and then snorted.
You're so lucky you're out of the loop, Charlie. That's all I'm going to say.
I punched Jacob lightly in the kidney while Charlie cringed.
Ow!
Jacob complained under his breath. Well, I'd thought I'd punch lightly.
Actually, Charlie, I have some errands to run.
Jacob shot a glance at me but said nothing.
Behind on your Christmas shopping, Bells? You only have a few days, you know.
Yeah, Christmas shopping, I said lamely. That explained the packing dust. Charlie must have put the old decorations up.
Don't worry, Nessie, he whispered in her ear. I got you covered if your mom drops the ball.
I rolled my eyes at him, but in truth, I hadn't thought about the holidays at all.
Lunch is on the table, Sue called from the kitchen. Come on, guys.
See you later, Dad, I said, and exchanged a quick look with Jacob. Even if he couldn't help but think about this near Edward, at least there wasn't much for him to share. He had no idea what I was up to.
Of course, I thought to myself as I got into the car, it wasn't like I had much idea either. The roads were slick and dark, but driving didn't intimidate me anymore. My reflexes were well up to the job, and I barely paid attention to the road. The problem was keeping my speed from attracting attention when I had company. I wanted to be done with today's mission, to have the mystery sorted out so that I could get back to the vital task of learning. Learning to protect some, learning to kill others. I was getting better and better with my shield. Kate didn't feel the need to motivate me anymore. It wasn't hard to find reasons to feel angry, now that I knew that was the key, and so I mostly worked with Zafrina. She was pleased with my extension. I was able to cover almost a 10-foot area for more than a minute, though it exhausted me. This morning, she'd been trying to find out if I could push the shield away from my mind altogether. I didn't see what the use of that would be, but Zafrina thought it would help strengthen me, like exercising muscles in the stomach and back rather than just the arms. Eventually, you could lift more weight when all the muscles were stronger. I wasn't very good at it. I had only gotten one glimpse of the jungle river she was trying to show me. But there were different ways to prepare for what was coming, and with only 2 weeks left, I worried that I might be neglecting the most important. Today, I would rectify that oversight. I'd memorized the appropriate maps, and I had no problem finding my way to the address that didn't exist online, the one for Jay Jenks. My next step would be Jason Jenks at the other address, the one Alice had not given me. To say that it wasn't a nice neighborhood would be an understatement. The most nondescript of all the Cullens' cars was still outrageous on this street. My old Chevy would have looked healthy here. During my human years, I would have locked the doors and driven away as fast as I dared. As it was, I was a little fascinated. I tried to imagine Alice in this place for any reason and failed. The buildings, all three stories, all narrow, all leaning slightly as if bowed by the pounding rain, were mostly old houses divided up into multiple apartments. It was hard to tell what color the peeling paint was supposed to be. Everything had faded to shades of gray. A few of the buildings had businesses on the first floor, a dirty bar with the windows painted black, a psychic supply store with neon hands and tarot cards glowing fitfully on the door, a tattoo parlor, and a daycare with duct tape holding the broken front window together. There were no lamps on inside any of the rooms, though it was grim enough outside that the human should have needed the light. I could hear the low mumbling of voices in the distance. It sounded like TV. There were a few people about, two shuffling through the rain in opposite directions and one sitting on the shallow porch of a boarded-up cut-rate law office, reading a wet newspaper and whistling. The sound was much too cheerful for the setting. I was so bemused by the carefree whistler, I didn't realize at first that the abandoned building was right where the address I was looking for should exist. There were no numbers on the dilapidated place, but the tattoo parlor beside it was just two numbers off. I pulled up to the curb and idled for a second. I was getting into that dump one way or another, but how to do so without the whistler noticing me? I could park the next street over and come through the back. There might be more witnesses on that side. Maybe the rooftops? Was it dark enough for that kind of thing? "Hey, lady," the whistler called to me. I rolled the passenger window down as if I couldn't hear him. The man laid his paper aside, and his clothes surprised me now that I could see them. Under his long, ragged duster, he was a little too well-dressed. There was no breeze to give me the scent, but the sheen on his dark red shirt looked like silk. His crinkly black hair was tangled and wild, but his dark skin was smooth and perfect, his teeth white and straight. A contradiction. "Maybe you shouldn't park that car there, lady," he said. "It might not be here when you get back." "Thanks for the warning," I said. I shut off the engine and got out. Perhaps my whistling friend could give me the answers I needed faster than breaking and entering. I opened my big gray umbrella, not that I cared really about protecting the long cashmere sweater dress I wore. It was what a human would do. The man squinted through the rain at my face, and then his eyes widened. He swallowed, and I heard his heart accelerate as I approached. "I'm looking for someone," I began. "I'm someone," he offered with a smile. "What can I do for you, beautiful?" "Are you Jay Jenks?" I asked. "Oh," he said, and his expression changed from anticipation to understanding. He got to his feet and examined me with narrowed eyes. "Why are you looking for Jay?" "That's my business." Besides, I didn't have a clue. "Are you Jay?" "No." We faced each other for a long moment while his sharp eyes ran up and down the fitted pearl gray sheath I wore. His gaze finally made it to my face. "You don't look like the usual customer." "I'm probably not the usual," I admitted, "but I do need to see him as soon as possible." "I'm not sure what to do," he admitted. "Why don't you tell me your name?" He grinned. "Max." "Nice to meet you, Max. Now why don't you tell me what you do for the usual?" His grin became a frown. "Well, Jay's usual clients don't look a thing like you. Your kind doesn't bother with the downtown office. You just go straight up to his fancy office in the skyscraper." I repeated the other address I had, making the list of numbers a question. "Yeah, that's the place," he said, suspicious again. "How come you didn't go there?" "This was the address I was given by a very dependable source. If you were up to any good, you wouldn't be here." I pursed my lips. I'd never been much good at bluffing, but Alice hadn't left me a lot of alternatives. "Maybe I'm not up to any good." Max's face turned apologetic. "Look, lady, Bella." "Right, Bella. See, I need this job. Jay pays me pretty good to mostly just hang out here all day. I want to help you, I do, but, and of course I'm speaking hypothetically, right? Or off the record, or whatever works for you. But if I pass somebody through that could get him in trouble, I'm out of work. Do you see my problem?" I thought for a minute, chewing on my lip. "You've never seen anyone like me here before?" "Well, sort of like me. My sister is a lot shorter than me, and she has dark, spiky black hair." "Jay knows your sister?" "I think so." Max pondered this for a moment. I smiled at him, and his breathing stuttered. "Tell you what I'll do. I'll give Jay a call and describe you to him. Let him make the decision." What did Jay Jenks know? Would my description mean something to him? That was a troubling thought. "My last name is Cullen," I told Max, wondering if that was too much information. I was starting to get irritated with Alice. Did I really have to be quite this blind? She could have given me one or two more words. "Cullen, got it." I watched as he dialed, easily picking out the number. Well, I could call Jay Jenks myself if this didn't work.
Hey, Jay, it's Max. I know I'm never supposed to call you at this number except in an emergency.
Is there an emergency? I heard faintly from the other end.
Well, not exactly. It's this girl who wants to see you.
I failed to see the emergency in that. Why didn't you follow normal procedure?
I didn't follow normal procedure because she don't look like any kind of normal.
Is she a badge?
No.
You can't be sure about that.
Does she look like one of Kubarev's?
No. Let me talk, okay? She says you know her sister or something.
Not likely.
What does she look like?
She looks like... His eyes ran from my face to my shoes appreciatively. Well, she looks like a freaking supermodel. That's what she looks like.
I smiled, and he winked at me, then went on.
Rockin' body, pale as a sheet, dark brown hair almost to her waist. Needs a good night's sleep. Any of this sounding familiar?
No, it doesn't. I'm not happy that you let your weakness for pretty women interrupt.
Yeah, so I'm a sucker for the pretty ones. What's wrong with that?
I'm sorry I bothered you, man. Just forget it.
Name, I whispered.
Oh, right. Wait, Max said. She says her name is Bella Cullen. That help?
There was a beat of dead silence, and then the voice on the other end was abruptly screaming, using a lot of words you didn't often hear outside of truck stops. Max's whole expression changed. All the joking vanished, and his lips went pale.
Because you didn't ask, Max yelled back, panicked.
There was another pause while Jay collected himself.
Beautiful and pale? Jay asked, a tiny bit calmer.
I said that, didn't I?
Beautiful and pale. What did this man know about vampires? Was he one of us himself? I wasn't prepared for that kind of confrontation. I gritted my teeth. What had Alice gotten me into?
Max waited for a minute through another volley of shouted insults and instructions, and then glanced at me with eyes that were almost frightened.
But you only meet downtown clients on Thursdays.
Okay, okay. On it. He slid his phone shut.
He wants to see me? I asked brightly.
Max glowered. You could have told me you were a priority client.
I didn't know I was.
I thought you might be a cop, he admitted. I mean, you don't look like a cop, but you act kind of weird, beautiful. I shrugged.
Drug cartel? He guessed.
Who, me? I asked.
Yeah, or your boyfriend or whatever.
Nope, sorry. I'm not really a fan of drugs, and neither is my husband. Just say no and all that.
Max cussed under his breath.
Married? Can't catch a break.
I smiled.
Mafia?
Nope.
Diamond smuggling.
Please. Is that the kind of people you usually deal with, Max? Maybe you need a new job.
I had to admit, I was enjoying myself a little. I hadn't interacted with humans much besides Charlie and Sue. It was entertaining to watch him flounder. I was also pleased at how easy it was not to kill him.
You gotta be involved in something big and bad, he mused.
It's not really like that.
That's what they all say. But who else needs papers? Or can afford to pay Jay's prices for them, I should say.
None of my business anyway, he said, and then muttered the word married again. He gave me an entirely new address with basic directions, and then watched me drive away with suspicious, regretful eyes. At this point, I was ready for almost anything. Some kind of James Bond villain's high-tech lair seemed appropriate, so I thought Max must have given me the wrong address as a test. Or maybe the lair was subterranean, underneath this very commonplace strip mall, nestled up against a wooded hill in a nice family neighborhood. I pulled into an open spot and looked up at a tastefully subtle sign that read, Jason Scott, Attorney at Law. The office inside was beige with celery green accents, inoffensive and unremarkable. There was no scent of vampire here, and that helped me relax. Nothing but unfamiliar human. A fish tank was set into the wall, and a blandly pretty blonde receptionist sat behind the desk.
Hello, she greeted me. How can I help you?
I'm here to see Mr. Scott. Do you have an appointment?
Not exactly. She smirked a little.
It could be a while, then. Why don't you have a seat while I...
April! A man's demanding voice squawked from the phone on her desk. I'm expecting a Miss Cullen shortly. I smiled and pointed to myself. Send her in immediately. Do you understand? I don't care what it's interrupting.
I could hear something else in his voice besides impatience. Stress. Nerves. She's just arrived, April said as soon as she could speak.
What? Send her in. What are you waiting for?
Right away, Mr. Scott. She got to her feet, fluttering her hands as she led the way down a short hallway, offering me coffee or tea or anything else I might have wanted. Here you are, she said as she ushered me through the door into a power office, complete with heavy wooden desk and vanity wall.
Close the door behind you, a raspy tenor voice ordered.
I examined the man behind the desk while April made a hasty retreat. He was short and balding, probably around 55 with a paunch. He wore a red silk tie with a blue and white striped shirt, and his navy blazer hung over the back of his chair. He was also trembling, blanched to a sickly paste color, with sweat beading on his forehead. I imagined an ulcer churning away under the spare tire. Jay recovered himself and rose unsteadily from his chair. He reached his hand across the desk.
Miss Cullen, what an absolute delight.
I crossed to him and shook his hand quickly once. He cringed slightly at my cold skin, but did not seem particularly surprised by it. Mr. Jenks, or do you prefer Scott? He winced again.
Whatever you wish, of course.
How about you call me Bella, and I'll call you Jay?
Like old friends, he agreed, mopping a silk handkerchief across his forehead.
He gestured for me to have a seat and took his own.
I must ask, am I finally meeting Mr. Jasper's lovely wife?
I weighed that for a second. So this man knew Jasper, not Alice. Knew him, and seemed afraid of him, too. His sister-in-law, actually. He pursed his lips as if he were grasping for meanings just as desperately as I was.
I trust Mr. Jasper is in good health? He asked carefully.
I'm sure he is in excellent health. He's on an extended vacation at the moment. This seemed to clear up some of Jay's confusion. He nodded to himself and templed his fingers.
Just so. You should have come to the main office. My assistance there would have put you straight through to me. No need to go through less hospitable channels.
I just nodded. I wasn't sure why Alice had given me the ghetto address.
Ah, well, you're here now. What can I do for you?
Papers. I said, trying to make my voice sound like I knew what I was talking about.
Certainly, Jay agreed at once. Are we talking birth certificates, death certificates, driver's licenses, passports, social security cards?
I took a deep breath and smiled. I owed Max big time. And then my smile faded. Alice had sent me here for a reason, and I was sure it was to protect Renesmee, her last gift to me. The one thing she would know I needed. The only reason Renesmee would need a forger was if she was running. And the only reason Renesmee would be running was if we had lost. If Edward and I were running with her, she wouldn't need these documents right away. I was sure IDs were something Edward knew how to get his hands on or make himself, and I was sure he knew ways to escape without them. We could run with her for thousands of miles. We could swim with her across an ocean. If we were around to save her. And all the secrecy to keep this out of Edward's head. Because there was a good chance that everything he knew, Aro would know. If we lost, Aro would certainly get the information he craved before he destroyed Edward. It was as I had suspected. We couldn't win, but we must have a good shot at killing Dimitri before we lost, giving Renesmee the chance to run. My still heart felt like a boulder in my chest. A crushing weight. All my hope faded like fog in the sunshine. My eyes pricked. Who would I put this on? Charlie? But he was so defenselessly human. And how would I get Renesmee to him? He was not going to be anywhere close to that fight. So that left one person. There really had never been anyone else. I thought this through so quickly that Jay didn't notice my pause. 2 birth certificates, 2 passports, 1 driver's license, I said in a low, strained tone. If he noticed the change in my expression, he pretended otherwise. The names? Jacob Wolf and Vanessa Wolf. Nessie seemed like an okay nickname for Vanessa. Jacob would get a kick out of the Wolf thing. His pen scratched swiftly across a legal pad. Middle names? Just put something generic in. If you prefer. Ages? 27 for the man, 5 for the girl. Jacob could pull it off. He was a beast. And at the rate Renesmee was growing, I'd better estimate high. He could be her stepfather.
I'll need pictures if you prefer finished documents, Jay said, interrupting my thoughts. Mr. Jasper usually liked to finish them himself.
Well, that explained why Jay didn't know what Alice looked like. Hold on, I said. This was luck. I had several family pictures shoved in my wallet, and the perfect one. Jacob holding Renesmee on the front porch steps was only a month old. Alice had given it to me just a few days before. Oh, maybe there wasn't that much luck involved after all. Alice knew I had this picture. Maybe she'd even had some dim flash that I would need it before she gave it to me. Here you go. Jay examined the picture for a moment. Your daughter is very like you. I tensed. She's more like her father. Who is not this man? He touched Jacob's face. My eyes narrowed and new sweat beads popped out on Jay's shiny head. No, that is a very close friend of the family. Forgive me, he mumbled, and the pen began scratching again. How soon will you need the documents? Can I get them in a week? That's a rush order. It will cost twice as... But forgive me. I forgot with whom I was speaking. Clearly he knew Jasper. Just give me a number. He seemed hesitant to say it aloud, though I was sure having dealt with Jasper, he must have known that price wasn't really an object, not even taking into consideration the bloated accounts that existed all over the world with the Cullens' various names on them. There was enough cash stashed all over the house to keep a small country afloat for a decade. It reminded me of the way there were always 100 fish hooks in the back of any drawer at Charlie's house. I doubted anyone would even notice the small stack I'd removed in preparation for today. Jay wrote the price down on the bottom of the legal pad. I nodded calmly. I had more than that with me. I unclasped my bag again and counted out the right amount. I had it all paper-clipped into $5,000 increments, so it took no time at all. There.
Bella, you don't really have to give me the entire sum now. It's customary for you to save half to ensure delivery.
I smiled wanly at the nervous man. But I trust you, Jay. Besides, I'll give you a bonus, the same again when I get the documents.
That's not necessary, I assure you.
Don't worry about it. It wasn't like I could take it with me. So I'll meet you here next week at the same time? He gave me a pained look. Actually, I prefer to make such transactions in places unrelated to my various businesses. Of course, I'm sure I'm not doing this the way you expect. I'm used to having no expectations when it comes to the Cullen family. He grimaced and then quickly composed his face again. Shall we meet at 8 o'clock a week from tonight at the Pacifico? It's on Union Lake and the food is exquisite. Perfect. Not that I would be joining him for dinner. He actually wouldn't like it much if I did. I rose and shook his hand again. This time he didn't flinch, but he did seem to have some new worry on his mind. His mouth was pinched up, his back tense. Will you have trouble with that deadline? I asked. What? He looked up, taken off guard by my question. The deadline? Oh, no, no worries at all. I will certainly have your documents done on time. It would have been nice to have Edward here, so that I would know what Jay's real worries were. I sighed. Keeping secrets from Edward was bad enough. Having to be away from him was almost too much. Then I'll see you in 1 week. Chapter 34. Declared. I heard the music before I was out of the car. Edward hadn't touched his piano since the night Alice left. Now, as I shut the car door, I heard the song morph through a bridge and change into my lullaby. Edward was welcoming me home. I moved slowly as I pulled Renesmee, fast asleep, we'd been gone all day, from the car. We'd left Jacob at Charlie's. He'd said he was going to catch a ride home with Sue. I wondered if he was trying to fill his head with enough trivia to crowd out the image of the way my face had looked when I'd walked through Charlie's door. As I walked slowly to the Cullen house now, I recognized that the hope and uplift that seemed almost a visible aura around the big white house had been mine this morning, too. It felt alien to me now. I wanted to cry again, hearing Edward play for me, but I pulled it together. I didn't want him to be suspicious. I would leave no clues in his mind for Aro if I could help it. Edward turned his head and smiled when I came in the door, but kept playing. "Welcome home," he said, as if this was just any normal day, as if there weren't 12 other vampires in the room involved in various pursuits, and a dozen more scattered around somewhere. "Did you have a good time with Charlie today?" "Yes. Sorry I was gone so long. I stepped out to do a little Christmas shopping for Renesmee. I know it won't be much of an event, but..." I shrugged. Edward's lips turned down. He quit playing and spun around on the bench so that his whole body was facing me. He put one hand on my waist and pulled me closer. "I hadn't thought much about it. If you want to make an event of it..." "No," I interrupted him. I flinched internally at the idea of trying to fake more enthusiasm than the bare minimum. I just didn't want to let it pass without giving her something. "Do I get to see?" "If you want. It's only a little thing." Renesmee was completely unconscious, snoring delicately against my neck. I envied her. It would have been nice to escape reality, even for just a few hours. Carefully, I fished the little velvet jewelry bag from my clutch, without opening the purse enough for Edward to see the cash I was still carrying. It caught my eye from the window of an antique store while I was driving by. I shook the little golden locket into his palm. It was round with a slender vine border carved around the outside edge of the circle. Edward popped the tiny catch and looked inside. There was space for a small picture and, on the opposite side, an inscription in French. "Do you know what this says?" he asked in a different tone, more subdued than before. "The shopkeeper told me it said something along the lines of, 'More than my own life.' Is that right?" "Yes, he had it right." He looked up at me, his topaz eyes probing. I met his gaze for a moment, then pretended to be distracted by the television. "I hope she likes it," I muttered. "Of course she will," he said lightly, casually, and I was sure in that second that he knew I was keeping something from him. I was also sure that he had no idea of the specifics. "Let's take her home," he suggested, standing and putting his arm around my shoulders. I hesitated. "What?" he demanded. "I wanted to practice with Emmett a little. I'd lost the whole day to my vital errand. It made me feel behind." Emmett on the sofa with Rose and holding the remote, of course, looked up and grinned in anticipation. "Excellent. The forest needs thinning." Edward frowned at Emmett and then at me. "There's plenty of time for that tomorrow," he said. "Don't be ridiculous," I complained. "There's no such thing as plenty of time anymore. That concept does not exist. I have a lot to learn and..." He cut me off. "Tomorrow." And his expression was such that not even Emmett argued. I was surprised at how hard it was to go back to a routine that was, after all, brand new. But stripping away even that little bit of hope I'd been fostering made everything seem impossible. I tried to focus on the positives. There was a good chance that my daughter was going to survive what was coming, and Jacob too. If they had a future, then that was a kind of victory, wasn't it? Our little band must be going to hold their own if Jacob and Renesmee were going to have the opportunity to run in the first place. Yes, Alice's strategy only made sense if we were going to put up a really good fight. So a kind of victory there too, considering that the Volturi had never been seriously challenged in millennia. It was not going to be the end of the world, just the end of the Cullens, the end of Edward. the end of me. I preferred it that way, the last part anyway. I would not live without Edward again. If he was leaving this world, then I would be right behind him. I wondered idly now and then if there would be anything for us on the other side. I knew Edward didn't really believe so, but Carlyle did. I couldn't imagine it myself. On the other hand, I couldn't imagine Edward not existing somehow, somewhere. If we could be together in any place, then that was a happy ending. And so the pattern of my days continued, just that much harder than before. We went to see Charlie on Christmas Day. Edward, Renesmee, Jacob, and I. All of Jacob's pack were there, plus Sam, Emily, and Sue. It was a big help to have them there in Charlie's little rooms, their huge, warm bodies wedged into corners around his sparsely decorated tree. You could see exactly where he'd gotten bored and quit, and overflowing his furniture. You could always count on werewolves to be buzzed about a coming fight, no matter how suicidal. The electricity of their excitement provided a nice current that disguised my utter lack of spirit. Edward was, as always, a better actor than I was. Renesmee wore the locket I'd given her at dawn, and in her jacket pocket was the MP3 player Edward had given her, a tiny thing that held 5,000 songs already filled with Edward's favorites. On her wrist was an intricately braided Quileute version of a promise ring. Edward had gritted his teeth over that one, but it didn't bother me. Soon, so soon, I would be giving her to Jacob for safekeeping. How could I be bothered by any symbol of the commitment I was so relying on? Edward had saved the day by ordering a gift for Charlie, too. It had shown up yesterday, priority overnight shipping, and Charlie spent all morning reading the thick instruction manual to his new fishing sonar system. From the way the werewolves ate, Sue's lunch spread must have been good. I wondered how the gathering would have looked to an outsider. Did we play our parts well enough? Would a stranger have thought us a happy circle of friends enjoying the holiday with casual cheer? I think Edward and Jacob both were as relieved as I was when it was time to go. It felt odd to spend energy on the human facade when there were so many more important things to be doing. I had a hard time concentrating. At the same time, this was perhaps the last time I would see Charlie. Maybe it was a good thing I was too numb to really register that. I hadn't seen my mother since the wedding, but I found I could only be glad for the gradual distancing that had begun 2 years ago. She was too fragile for my world. I didn't want her to have any part of this. Charlie was stronger. Maybe even strong enough for a goodbye now, but I wasn't. It was very quiet in the car. Outside, the rain was just a mist, hovering on the edge between liquid and ice. Renesmee sat on my lap, playing with her locket, opening and closing it. I watched her and imagined the things I would say to Jacob right now, if I didn't have to keep my words out of Edward's head. If it's ever safe again, take her to Charlie. Tell him the whole story someday. Tell him how much I loved him, how I couldn't bear to leave him even when my human life was over. Tell him he was the best father. Tell him to pass my love on to Renee, all my hopes that she will be happy and well. I would have to give Jacob the documents before it was too late. I would give him a note for Charlie, too, and a letter for Renesmee. Something for her to read when I couldn't tell her I loved her anymore. There was nothing unusual about the outside of the Cullen house as we pulled into the meadow, but I could hear some kind of subtle uproar inside. Many low voices murmured and growled. It sounded intense, and it sounded like an argument. I could pick out Carlyle's voice and Amon's more often than the others. Edward parked in front of the house, rather than going around to the garage. We exchanged one wary glance before we got out of the car. Jacob's stance changed. His face turned serious and careful. I guessed that he was in alpha mode now. Obviously something had happened, and he was going to get the information he and Sam would need. "Alistair is gone," Edward murmured as we darted up the steps. Inside the front room, the main confrontation was physically apparent. Lining the walls was a ring of spectators, every vampire who had joined us, except for Alistair and the three involved in the quarrel. Esme, Kebby, and Tia were the closest to the three vampires in the center. In the middle of the room, Amon was hissing at Carlyle and Benjamin. Edward's jaw tightened and he moved quickly to Esme's side, towing me by the hand. I clutched Renesmee tightly to my chest.
Amon, if you want to go, no one is forcing you to stay, Carlyle said calmly.
You're stealing half my coven, Carlyle, Amon shrieked, stabbing one finger at Benjamin. Is that why you called me here? To steal from me?
Carlyle sighed, and Benjamin rolled his eyes.
Yes, Carlyle picked a fight with the Volturi, endangered his whole family, just to lure me here to my death, Benjamin said sarcastically. Be reasonable, Amon. I'm committed to do the right thing here. I'm not joining any other coven. You can do whatever you want, of course, as Carlyle has pointed out.
This won't end well, Amon growled. Alistair was the only sane one here. We should all be running.
Think of who you're calling sane, Tia murmured in a quiet aside.
We're all going to be slaughtered.
It's not going to come to a fight, Carlyle said in a firm voice.
You say?
If it does, you can always switch sides, Amon. I'm sure the Volturi will appreciate your help.
Amon sneered at him. Perhaps that is the answer.
Carlyle's answer was soft and sincere. I wouldn't hold that against you, Amon. We have been friends for a long time, but I would never ask you to die for me.
Amon's voice was more controlled, too. But you're taking my Benjamin down with you.
Carlyle put his hand on Amon's shoulder. Amon shook it off.
I'll stay, Carla, but it might be to your detriment. I will join them if that's the road to survival. You're all fools to think that you can defy the Volturi.
He scowled, then sighed, glanced at Renesmee and me, and added in an exasperated tone,
I will witness that the child has grown. That's nothing but the truth. Anyone would see that.
That's all we've ever asked.
Amon grimaced. But not all that you are getting, it seems. He turned on Benjamin. I gave you life. You're wasting it.
Benjamin's face looked colder than I'd ever seen it. The expression contrasted oddly with his boyish features.
It's a pity you couldn't replace my will with your own in the process. Perhaps then you would have been satisfied with me.
Amon's eyes narrowed. He gestured abruptly to Kebby, and they stalked past us out the front door.
He's not leaving, Edward said quietly to me, but he'll be keeping his distance even more from now on. He wasn't bluffing when he spoke of joining the Volturi.
Why did Alistair go? I whispered.
No one can be positive. He didn't leave a note. From his mutters, it's been clear that he thinks a fight is inevitable. Despite his demeanor, he actually does care too much for Carlyle to stand with the Volturi. I suppose he decided the danger was too much, Edward shrugged. Though our conversation was clearly just between the two of us, of course everyone could hear it. Eliezer answered Edward's comment like it had been meant for all.
From the sound of his mumblings, it was a bit more than that. We haven't spoken much of the Volturi agenda, but Alistair worried that no matter how decisively we can prove your innocence, the Volturi will not listen. He thinks they will find an excuse to achieve their goals here.
The vampires glanced uneasily at one another. The idea that the Volturi would manipulate their own sacrosanct law for gain was not a popular idea. Only the Romanians were composed, their small half-smiles ironic. They seemed amused at how the others wanted to think well of their ancient enemies. Many low discussions began at the same time, but it was the Romanians I listened to, maybe because the fair-haired Vladimir kept shooting glances in my direction.
I do so hope Alistair was right about this, Stefan murmured to Vladimir. No matter the outcome, word will spread. It's time our world saw the Volturi for what they've become. They'll never fall if everyone believes this nonsense about them protecting our way of life.
At least when we ruled, we were honest about what we were, Vladimir replied.
Stefan nodded. We'd never put on white hats and called ourselves saints.
I'm thinking the time has come to fight, Vladimir said. How can you imagine we'll ever find a better force to stand with? Another chance this good? Nothing is impossible. Maybe someday.
We've been waiting for 1,500 years, Stefan, and they've only gotten stronger with the years.
Vladimir paused and looked at me again. He showed no surprise when he saw that I was watching him, too.
If the Volturi win this conflict, they will leave with more power than they came with. With every conquest, they add to their strengths. Think of what that newborn alone could give them.
He jerked his chin toward me.
And she is barely discovering her gifts. And the Earth Mover.
Vladimir nodded toward Benjamin, who stiffened. Almost everyone was eavesdropping on the Romanians now, like me.
With their witch twins, they have no need of the illusionist or the fire touch.
His eyes moved to Zafrina, then Kate. Stefan looked at Edward.
Nor is the mind reader exactly necessary. But I see your point. Indeed, they will gain much if they win.
More than we can afford to have them gain, wouldn't you agree?
Stefan sighed. I think I must agree. And that means that we must stand against them while there is still hope. If we can just cripple them, even expose them, then someday others will finish the job.
And our long vendetta will be repaid. At last!
They locked eyes for a moment and then murmured in unison.
It seems the only way.
So we fight, Stefan said.
Though I could see that they were torn, self-preservation warring with revenge, the smile they exchanged was full of anticipation.
We fight, Vladimir agreed.
I suppose it was a good thing. Like Alistair, I was sure the battle was impossible to avoid. In that case, two more vampires fighting on our side could only help. But the Romanians' decision still made me shudder.
We will fight too, Tia said, her usually grave voice more solemn than ever. We believe the Volturi will overstep their authority. We have no wish to belong to them.
Her eyes lingered on her mate. Benjamin grinned and threw an impish glance toward the Romanians.
Apparently, I'm a hot commodity. It appears I have to win the right to be free.
This won't be the first time I've fought to keep myself from a king's rule, Garrett said in a teasing tone. He walked over and clapped Benjamin on the back. Here's to freedom from oppression.
We stand with Carlyle, Tanya said, and we fight with him.
The Romanians' pronouncement seemed to have made the others feel the need to declare themselves as well.
We have not decided, Peter said.
He looked down at his tiny companion. Charlotte's lips were set in dissatisfaction. It looked like she'd made her decision. I wondered what it was.
The same goes for me, Randall said.
And me, Mary added.
The Pax will fight with the Cullens, Jacob said suddenly.
We're not afraid of vampires, he added with a smirk.
Children, Peter muttered.
Infants, Randall corrected.
Jacob grinned tauntingly.
Well, I'm in too, Maggie said, shrugging out from under Siobhan's restraining hand.
I know truth is on Carlyle's side. I can't ignore that.
Siobhan stared at the junior member of her coven with worried eyes.
Carlyle? She said as if they were alone, ignoring the suddenly formal feel of the gathering, the unexpected outburst of declarations.
I don't want this to come to a fight.
Nor do I, Siobhan. You know that's the last thing I want.
He half-smiled.
Perhaps you should concentrate on keeping it peaceful.
You know that won't help, she said.
I remembered Rose and Carlyle's discussion of the Irish leader. Carlyle believed that Siobhan had some subtle but powerful gift to make things go her way, and yet Siobhan didn't believe it herself.
It couldn't hurt, Carlyle said.
Siobhan rolled her eyes.
Shall I visualize the outcome I desire?
She asked sarcastically.
Carlyle was openly grinning now. If you don't mind.
Then there is no need for my coven to declare itself, is there?
She retorted.
Since there is no possibility of a fight.
She put her hand back on Maggie's shoulder, pulling the girl closer to her. Siobhan's mate, Liam, stood silent and expressionless. Almost everyone else in the room looked mystified by Carlyle and Siobhan's clearly joking exchange, but they didn't explain themselves. That was the end of the dramatic speeches for the night. The group slowly dispersed, some off to hunt,
some to while away the time with Carlyle's books or televisions or computers. Edward, Renesmee, and I went to hunt. Jacob tagged along.
Stupid leeches, he muttered to himself when we got outside. Think they're so superior, he snorted.
They'll be shocked when the infants save their superior lives, won't they? Edward said. Jake smiled and punched his shoulder.
Hell yeah, they will.
This wasn't our last hunting trip. We all would hunt again nearer to the time we expected the Volturi. As the deadline was not exact, we were planning to stay a few nights out in the big baseball clearing Alice had seen, just in case. All we knew was that they would come the day that the snow stuck to the ground. We didn't want the Volturi too close to town, and Dimitri would lead them to wherever we were. I wondered who he would track in, and guessed that it would be Edward since he couldn't track me. I thought about Dimitri while I hunted, paying little attention to my prey or the drifting snowflakes that had finally appeared, but were melting before they touched the rocky soil. Would Dimitri realize that he couldn't track me? What would he make of that? What would Aro? Or was Edward wrong? There were those little exceptions to what I could withstand, those ways around my shield. Everything that was outside my mind was vulnerable, open to the things Jasper, Alice, and Benjamin could do. Maybe Dimitri's talent worked a little differently, too. And then I had a thought that brought me up short. The half-drained elk dropped from my hands to the stony ground. Snowflakes vaporized a few inches from the warm body with tiny sizzling sounds. I stared blankly at my bloody hands. Edward saw my reaction and hurried to my side, leaving his own kill undrained. What's wrong? He asked in a low voice, his eyes sweeping the forest around us, looking for whatever had triggered my behavior.
Renesmee,
I choked.
She's just through those trees, he reassured me. I can hear both her thoughts and Jacob. She's fine.
That's not what I meant, I said. I was thinking about my shield. You really think it's worth something? That it will help somehow? I know the others are hoping that I'll be able to shield Zafrina and Benjamin, even if I can only keep it up for a few seconds at a time. What if that's a mistake? What if your trust in me is the reason that we fail? My voice was edging toward hysteria, though I had enough control to keep it low. I didn't want to upset Renesmee.
Bella, what brought this on?
Of course it's wonderful that you can protect yourself, but you're not responsible for saving anyone. Don't distress yourself needlessly.
But what if I can't protect anything? I whispered in gasps. This thing I do, it's faulty. It's erratic. There's no rhyme or reason to it. Maybe it will do nothing against Alec at all.
Shh, he hushed me. Don't panic. And don't worry about Alec. What he does is no different than what Jane or Zafrina does. It's just an illusion. He can't get inside your head any more than I can.
But Renesmee does,
I hissed frantically through my teeth. It seems so natural. I never questioned it before. It's always been just part of who she is. But she puts her thoughts right into my head, just like she does with everyone else. My shield has holes, Edward. I stared at him desperately, waiting for him to acknowledge my terrible revelation. His lips were pursed, as if he was trying to decide how to phrase something. His expression was perfectly relaxed.
You thought of this a long time ago, didn't you? I demanded, feeling like an idiot for my months of overlooking the obvious.
He nodded, a faint smile pulling up one corner of his mouth. The first time she touched you. I sighed at my own stupidity, but his calm had mellowed me some.
And this doesn't bother you? You don't see it as a problem?
I have two theories, one more likely than the other. Give me the least likely first.
Well, she's your daughter, he pointed out. Genetically half you. I used to tease you about how your mind was on a different frequency than the rest of ours. Perhaps she runs on the same.
This didn't work for me.
But you hear her mind just fine. Everyone hears her mind. And what if Alec runs on a different frequency? What if...
He put a finger to my lips. I've considered that, which is why I think this next theory is much more likely. I gritted my teeth and waited.
Do you remember what Carlyle said to me about her? Right after she showed you that first memory.
Of course I remembered.
He said, it's an interesting twist, like she's doing the exact opposite of what you can.
Yes, and so I wondered, maybe she took your talent and flipped it too.
I considered that.
You keep everyone out, he began.
And no one keeps her out, I finished hesitantly.
That's my theory, he said. And if she can get into your head, I doubt there's a shield on the planet who could keep her at bay.
That will help.
From what we've seen, no one can doubt the truth of her thoughts once they've allowed her to show them. And I think no one can keep her from showing them if she gets close enough. If Aro allows her to explain.
I shuddered to think of Renesmee so close to Aro's greedy, milky eyes.
Well, he said, rubbing my tight shoulders, at least there's nothing that can stop him from seeing the truth.
But is the truth enough to stop him? I murmured.
For that, Edward had no answer.
Chapter 35. Deadline.
Headed out? Edward asked, his tone nonchalant. There was a sort of forced composure about his expression. He hugged Renesmee just a little bit tighter to his chest.
Yes, a few last-minute things, I responded just as casually.
He smiled my favorite smile.
Hurry back to me.
Always.
I took his Volvo again, wondering if he'd read the odometer after my last errand. How much had he pieced together?
That I had a secret, absolutely. Would he have deduced the reason why I didn't confide in him? Did he guess that Aro might soon know everything he knew?
I thought Edward could have come to that conclusion, which explained why he had demanded no reasons from me. I guessed he was trying not to speculate too much, trying to keep my behavior off his mind. Had he put this together with my odd performance the morning after Alice left, burning my book in the fire? I didn't know if he could have made that leap. It was a dreary afternoon, already dark as dusk. I sped through the gloom, my eyes on the heavy clouds. Would it snow tonight? Enough to layer the ground and create the scene from Alice's vision? Edward estimated that we had about 2 more days. Then we would set ourselves in the clearing, drawing the Volturi to our chosen place. As I headed through the darkening forest, I considered my last trip to Seattle. I thought I knew Alice's purpose in sending me to the dilapidated drop point where Jay Jenks referred as shadier clients. If I'd gone to one of his other more legitimate offices, would I have ever known what to ask for? If I'd met him as Jason Jenks or Jason Scott, legitimate lawyer, would I ever have unearthed Jay Jenks, purveyor of illegal documents? I'd had to go the route that made it clear I was up to no good. That was my clue. It was black when I pulled into the parking lot of the restaurant a few minutes early, ignoring the eager valets by the entrance. I popped in my contacts and then went to wait for Jay inside the restaurant. Though I was in a hurry to be done with this depressing necessity and back with my family, Jay seemed careful to keep himself untainted by his baser associations. I had a feeling a handoff in the dark parking lot would offend his sensibilities. I gave the name Jenks at the podium, and the obsequious maitre d' led me upstairs to a small private room with a fire crackling and a stone hearth. He took the calf-length ivory trench coat I'd worn to disguise the fact that I was wearing Alice's idea of appropriate attire and gasped quietly at my oyster satin cocktail dress. I couldn't help being a little flattered. I still wasn't used to being beautiful to everyone rather than just Edward. The maitre d' stuttered half-formed compliments as he backed unsteadily from the room.